is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Drive in the air, deep to right, it is gone!
This is a presentation of the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. Sox fans, single game tickets are on sale right now. Be here for opening day on March 28th at 3:10 p.m. Don't miss out on the season's biggest matchups, plus exciting new promotions and theme nights all summer long. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com today. We got a ball game this afternoon. The White Sox continue Cactus League play in less than an hour. Len Casper and Darren Jackson will take over right at 2 o'clock. White Sox and Rangers, the matchup. They'll play the defending World Series champion Rangers in Cactus League action. Dylan Cease gets the ball for the White Sox. First Cactus League start for him. John Gray, same thing for the Rangers. We have seen, or rather heard, we have reports from guys like Daryl Van Scown of the Sun-Times down in Glendale that the velocity has been up just a little bit for Dylan Cease and a couple of different pitchers as well. The Sox are now 3-6 in the Cactus League, lost to the Cubs yesterday, 10-6 the final. That game was on our air on ESPN 1000, bringing you 10 matchups throughout the course of spring. Like I said, Len and DJ have the next one in just under an hour. Got a lot of news for the White Sox, a couple of injuries that are affecting the pitching staff. We've got some players signing contracts. Team control contracts, so it's not like it's huge news, but still good to know that everybody's in the fold. We've got some good play so far in spring. We've got some eyebrow raisers so far, as we always do. And MLB.com has a pretty interesting article out on defense this season. Want to get into that as well. Oh, and later on in the show, we're going to talk to White Sox Director of Youth Baseball, Michael Huff, about the upcoming opening for camps, baseball and softball camps throughout the Chicagoland area, 50 of them. Registration opens up next week. Michael's going to tell you how to get yourself involved, really your kids involved. But you, if your kid listening at home and thinking, you know what, mom and dad just haven't been sending me to enough White Sox baseball camps in the summer, this is the show for you. We're going to tell you exactly how to get yourself registered and signed up and have a great time in summer 2024. All right, let's get to some of the news items. We'll deal with some of the injuries a little bit later on, but the White Sox did send a press release on Friday afternoon. They have agreed to terms on contracts with 22 players, all under team control. That's Tanner Banks, Prelander Baroa, Shane Drohan, Jake Eater, Davey Garcia, Bailey Horn, Jimmy Lambert, Davis Martin, Sammy Peralta, Jesse Schultens, Jared Schuster, and Alex Spies. Bailey Horn's a new name, and we're going to talk about the trade the White Sox made with the Cubs. Actually, it's Bailey Horn going from the White Sox to the Cubs and then back to the White Sox, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Corey Lee's got a contract. Brian Ramos, Jose Rodriguez, Gavin Sheets, Braden Shumake, Lenin Sosa, Peyton Burdick, Oscar Colas, Zach DeLoach, and Dominic Fletcher. So the entire 40-man roster all have signed contracts. It almost always happens at this point in spring. I mean, there's every now and again a team that has a holdout or what have you, but it's just, I don't know, it's good to cross the T's and dot the lowercase J's and know that things are coming together. We saw Michael Kopech pitch for the first time in Arizona yesterday. Like I said in last week's show, I don't necessarily put a ton of stock in the results, the stat lines of spring training. I'm a lot more interested in what coaches will tell you about the approach to the work, about the stuff on the backfields and in the cages, than I am about the results necessarily. Although, games being what they are and on our air, we'll talk about some of the results just a little bit. Maybe you can clue us in a tiny bit as to what's going on. Kopech was, you know, looked good velocity-wise, was effectively wild, as Darren Jackson said during the broadcast, was able to get a good number of strikeouts. Let's see, the line in total for Michael Kopech yesterday against the Cubs was two innings of work, five strikeouts, and a walk. He was kind of all over the place in that first inning, settled down some in the second. But it'll be, for Michael Kopech this season, it's about finding the strike zone with good velocity to me. I know that that slider's got a little bit of a ways to go, and you'd love to see him develop some sort of reliable third pitch, whether that's getting the curveball back in the mix, whether that's developing some sort of change, a wrinkle on a slide, whatever that is, a third pitch at some point here would be a big development for Michael Kopech's 2024 campaign. But given the way that 2023 kind of stumbled toward the finish line for Kopech, you want to see velo and you want to see it toward the strike zone. And that was there in pieces yesterday. Eloy Jimenez continues a pretty good start to his spring. He was 1-for-3 and overall has gone, let's see, is it 8-for-15? Yeah, 8-for-15 to start the spring for Eloy Jimenez. Still no home runs. He's got a pair of doubles, a good amount of singles. Mike Moustakas is kind of on the other side of that extreme. He's 1-for-15. Dominic Fletcher, 2-for-14 so far. And then Kevin Pillar has gotten a lot of at-bats. 2-for-14, too. Those are the guys who've taken a lot of swings. Home run hitters for the White Sox in spring. That's Gavin Sheets, man. I mean, listen, it's been less than a week of games. Over a week of games, I guess, but just. Gavin Sheets is 4-for-10. He's got two homers, both of them solo shots. He's walked twice. He's struck out twice. I don't know what the final roster is going to look like, what the last set of 26 is going to look like when the White Sox come back home March 28th to face the Tigers at Guaranteed Rate Field. But make no mistake, and we talked about this when it happened, when Mike Moustakas signed, that's direct competition for Gavin Sheets. And right now, at least speaking to the results on the field, Gavin Sheets has responded. And I got to tell you, if nothing else, I mean, Moustakas' career being where it is right now, if this lit a fire under either one of them, to make the swing change they've been holding out on. I'm just kind of inventing issues here. But, you know, however that works, good. You know, if that results in better production, good. It's a business after all, and you love to see the White Sox kind of deliver the business end as opposed to the other side of things. Now, we do have some injuries. We'll talk about the Tommy John surgery to Jesse Schultens in a little bit here. Suffice it to say that Jesse Schultens is going to miss this season due to Tommy John surgery. But a couple of liners in Daryl Van Scowen's piece in the Sun-Times 2 days ago dealt with some injuries to guys like Jimmy Lambert and Joe Barlow. They're both out a few weeks with shoulder soreness. Lambert, though, said his deal is kind of a minor issue and it's more caution than anything else. John Brebbia is still in a boot with a calf issue. So there are pitching injuries starting to crop up for the White Sox. There always are. You hope the assembled depth that the White Sox have been able to put together this season helps them, you know, kind of stave off some of these injury issues and at least come to the regular season with a representative number of bodies to take the innings they want to. They've certainly given themselves some options, done a good job collecting a lot of different options towards the middle of a bullpen. Speaking of bullpen, and I guess, you know, we won't be doing that much for Garrett Crochet anymore, at least we don't think so. Garrett Crochet made a start in spring training, an inning and two-thirds. He faced the Dodgers. 3 billion people were at Camelback Ranch to see Shohei Ohtani strike out against Garrett Crochet. He got him looking, froze him. We saw 100 miles an hour from Garrett Crochet as well, and he's talked a lot about that velocity maybe not being there in starts, you know, wanting to save a little bit for later, that kind of thing. I remain very fascinated with the plan for Garrett Crochet, with the fact that Chris Getz hasn't closed the door on him taking starts in the bigs at some point, maybe even early on this year. It is unconventional, to say the least. But, you know, if you're looking at a talent that could do it, Garrett Crochet is perhaps that guy. He's had the Tommy John. He's bounced through injuries. He's been a high draft pick with some extreme velocity. I'll be real interested to see what kind of pitcher he is as a finished product, as a starter, whether that finished, not like a finished production product, but just kind of what arsenal he's bringing to play in his first start, whether that be at AAA Charlotte or with the White Sox at the bigs. I want to get into a couple of things that got put up about the defense for the White Sox when we come back. Mike Petriello wrote a really interesting piece about the best projected defenses for 2024, and the White Sox have made an enormous leap from last year. We'll get to that on the other side of a quick break. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight
on the home of the White Sox,
ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Tuesdays this month are spring trading days on ESPN Chicago. It's the same hosts paired with different partners. Who will it be this Tuesday?
Yurko and Waddle, 7 to 10. Carmen and Black, noon to 3. Sylvie and Cap, 2:30 to 6:30. And Abdallah and Jay Hood, 6:30 to 8.
Spring trading days on the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. White Sox and Rangers coming up in just a little bit. Len Casper and Darren Jackson have the call starting at 2 o'clock. Dylan Cease for the White Sox, John Gray for the Rangers. Sox fans sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single-game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. We have a conversation with Michael Huff, director of White Sox Youth Baseball, coming up in just a bit on the show. Looking forward to that. But as I mentioned before the break, Mike Petriello is a great baseball writer for MLB.com. Does a lot of good stuff with numbers, I think. Wrote an interesting piece about the best projected defenses for 2024. I'll get to where the White Sox are on this list after I tell you this. Last year, he writes in this piece, last year's World Series teams, the Diamondbacks and the Rangers, were each in the top three of defenses in Major League Baseball. We're talking about the plays on the field, right? Not the pitching run prevention side. This is the defense, projected defensive runs saved. The Guardians have the best projected defense right now. And he uses Zips. Dan Zimborski's got a great model. It's called Zips. It's on FanGraphs. He uses Zips to generate these projections. And granted, it does its best to guess at what the depth charts are going to look like for these teams and what the playing time is going to look like for these teams. So that's very much a best guess, but it's a pretty good one at this point in the season. Still with a couple of guys unsigned to some big teams, but we'll see. Now, the White Sox were ranked 9th on this list. I'll read you the blurb that Petriello wrote up. They're a plus 17 in defensive runs saved. The Twins are ranked 8th with 18 runs saved, and the Orioles are ranked 10th with plus 16. Here's what he wrote up about the White Sox. This is easily our favorite projection because Chicago was straight up bad with the glove last year, ranked last in Major League Baseball, to the point that new GM Chris Getz said he was having difficulty convincing free agent pitchers to sign with the team for fear of playing in front of the defense. We figured he'd improve the gloves, Petriello writes, and he has, but we thought poor but better. Instead, it might actually be good, which is great. If it is, it's because the returning Luis Robert Jr. is an excellent defender. Nicky Lopez, Paul DeJong always play strong defense, even if the bats might lag. Max Stassi didn't play in 2023 for personal reasons, but for years been an excellent framer. Still weak spots with Benintendi in left and Vaughn at first, but as we said above, up the middle fielding is more valuable than corner fielding. It's a different roster now. The White Sox don't have to be and won't be baseball's best defensive team. They might be the most improved, though. That's Mike Petriello on MLB.com, which I think is a really interesting, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a mission accomplished for the White Sox. There's still a lot of work to do, right? I mean, even in this write-up, we hear about the bats that need some help in Nicky Lopez and Paul DeJong, even though they're good defenders up the middle at second and short, respectively. There, of course, is a question of where the runs are going to come from for the White Sox. But if the defense is that much better, ranking from vaulting up from the very bottom of baseball into the top 10, ranked 8th, 9th overall, this is a big jump, and it should be meaningful. Playing defense is absolutely clutch in this league. You have to do it to win ball games. But it's also a measure of not making mistakes, right? Measuring the thing that didn't happen. And I guess from that standpoint, while the White Sox will be a better club, the team still has to score runs and not walk hitters and, you know, do all of those things that are outside the control of the defense in order to win more games than they did last season. 2024 is going to be a very interesting measure of what got accomplished during the offseason and what still needs to be addressed. But a better focus on defense has clearly been applied both through the roster and the coaching staff. And, you know, I for one, am really interested to see that part of the team shine a lot brighter this year than it did last year. We get back, we'll talk about the injury to Jesse Schultens, the depth of the pitching for the White Sox here as we stand now in spring training, and we'll talk to Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, a little bit later on in the show. Sox and Rangers coming up at 2 o'clock. It's White Sox Weekly till then on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly
on the home of the Chicago White Sox,
ESPN 1000. We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox teams are better together. Reconnect with your group at Guaranteed Rate Field this season. No matter the occasion, we have a variety of areas that are sure to meet your needs. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. Also, Sox fans, you can stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team on social media, all of their accounts, at White Sox. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow the White Sox on social today. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk with White Sox Director of Youth Baseball, Michael Huff. Camps are starting soon. The website is open. Head to the White Sox website. Get your kids, or you, I guess, if you wanted to, into a youth baseball or softball camp for this coming summer. Always good to talk to Mike. And he's a guy who's been there before, too. I mean, he's been on Cactus League rosters. Well, I guess it wasn't the Cactus League at the time. He's been on spring training rosters. He understands what it is to both know you're going to make a team and know you might not. So we're going to talk to him about kind of that perspective and a lot of youth training stuff, a lot of scouting stuff. Always a good time talking baseball with Michael Huff. That'll be in just a couple of minutes. Wanted to get to a couple of things, just kind of transaction-wise, that concerned the White Sox in the last week since we talked. We'll start with the injury news, only because it's a little bit, it's unfortunate for sure, but it's a little bit simpler than the trade, Bailey Horn and Matt Thompson, which we'll get to in a moment. But Jesse Schultens was put on the 60-day injured list. It's a torn UCL. He has had Tommy John surgery. That happened yesterday. Made his major league debut as a 30-year-old last April. Pitched well against the Pirates in his debut. And to be quite honest with you, held his own in a lot of starts. The late season stuff, you could kind of see fatigue, and hopefully not this elbow injury, pop up and begin to affect his stuff. He was one of the guys tossed into the rotation, asked to take a spot in the rotation after Lucas Giolito and Lance Lynn were traded. He and Touki Toussaint were the 4 and 5 starters. And things took a turn for Schultens a little bit. A 5.29 ERA at the end of his last season. A longtime Padres minor leaguer. But a guy that for the White Sox here in 2024 didn't necessarily have a guaranteed spot. You know, it's possible, I think unlikely, but possible, that Schultens was going to break camp as a starter with the club. Looks more and more like that's going to be Touki Toussaint filling out that 5 spot for the White Sox. But he definitely figured into the minor league depth, or at least the innings bulk depth. It's possible that he would have been on the squad as a long reliever, a guy to take some spot starts or what have you. But something I'm hearing more and more from people who cover teams all across baseball right now is the work that had gone into this past offseason acquiring the kind of pitching depth, whether that was going to be you know, in the upper levels of the minors at AAA, guys who had major league experience that could be either convinced to start the year in AAA, knowing that there'd be an injury to pop back up, or a guy that'd be convinced to be a long man in a bullpen that could move into a rotation or be part of an unconventional situation. These guys were sought after in this last offseason and have been for a while now. And one of the things that I've been saying for, I think, and not to say that I'm the only person doing this, one of the things that I've been saying for a while here is, I understand that you, at whatever team you're talking about, right? Oh, they got a great starting five. Oh, boy, look at that starting rotation. All five of them, they're great. I think the days of a team having five starters being the only starters that matter are long past us. It's possible that somebody has a real good run of health luck at some point here or something. But anymore, I don't care who your top 13 pitchers are. I care who your top 18 pitchers are. I care who your top 20 are. Let me know who those guys are, and then I'll assess whether you've got the pitching depth necessary to succeed in a major league season. And sometimes it's not even just the overall talent of those arms. It's just how much can you replace in a rotation? You know, what is the value above replacement player that each next guy might bring you? And that has a lot to do, I think, when you start talking about starting pitching injuries that may occur over the course of a year. That has a lot to do with stuff. It has a lot to do with strikeout rate, but it has a lot to do with innings. You know, just the ability to eat innings. If you're the seventh or eighth guy in that rotation making starts, you know, maybe you're filling in for a season-ending injury or a trade or something like that, but it might well be that you're a guy deep in a roster, that seventh or eighth starter, that's got to take a month's worth of starts, 2 months worth of starts before that, I don't know, ace comes back into the rotation healthy, or before the team is able, if you're a team making a postseason run, before the team is able to get the runway necessary to get their starter, or often starters, back up to speed. Well, you need to be a guy who can eat innings then. And you need to be a guy who can keep your team in the game. Whether you're a veteran or whether you're a young kid coming up, the ask in a situation like that is so different than being a guy that you know is going to be in the rotation at the start of the year. And to that end, I think a guy like Touki Toussaint, a guy like Jesse Schultens, and you're going to look at organizations around the league and go, well, there are similar dudes everywhere. Yes, but the mentality, the understanding of how to work through a game, keep your team in it, and get to into the sixth, shoot into the seventh is fantastic. That's meaningful for clubs. It's absolutely meaningful. It's something that's been sought after. And I think you got to tip your hat to Jesse Schultens for doing that as many times as he could last season. And also, you know, with the injury to Jesse Schultens, it starts shifting the focus on who may be that next guy making a start for the White Sox, if that starting five changes a little bit. Obviously, we've been talking about the potential trade of Dylan Cease here for a minute, right? But that's not to say that there couldn't be other injuries or turns that this spring training could take that might bump one of the starting five out of the rotation one way or another. Obviously, you hope for no injuries, period. But Dylan Cease, Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, Michael Soroka, and Chris Flexen look to be that starting five. And obviously, Garrett Crochet impressed in his work as a starter. We talked about that already on the show. But as you go through the depth chart now with Schultens removed, really for me, it means that a guy like Jake Eder and Jared Schuster and Nick Nastrini are perhaps that much closer to making their major league debut in 2024 than they were earlier. I hope for great springs out of each of those three youngsters. Only of the three of them, Schuster is the only one who's made major league starts yet, major league appearances yet. But with Nastrini and Eder having the reputations that they do of being good stuff guys, guys looking to harness the zone a little bit more, I could see them move a little bit through the system. And now, without Jesse Schultens, whether at AAA or in the bullpen or whatever, available to take starts for them, for the White Sox, it's possible that some of those young kids are a little bit closer than they were in the past. Now, to the bullpen side of things, the White Sox made a trade in this last week, reacquiring Bailey Horn. It was a deal with the Chicago Cubs. Horn was a draft pick by the White Sox in the fifth round of the 2020 MLB draft. He is 26 years old, turned 26 in January, lefty arm, and they moved him, they acquired him from Matt Thompson, who was a second-round pick of the White Sox in the 2019 draft. Now, this is probably some other White Sox Weekly show. We'll talk a little bit about the draft history of the White Sox here in the last few years, but there were a lot of hopes on guys named Jared Kelly, Matt Thompson, and Andrew Dahlquist, three young team pitchers, high prep pitchers that the White Sox took in high rounds of the 18 and 19 drafts, and had been, you know, thought of as at risky picks, guys with good arms, good builds, you know, projection kind of dudes, and it's just been it's been difficult for each of the three of them in different ways to make the advancement that the White Sox hoped they would. Thompson's still young. He's 23 going on 24. The White Sox were very pleased with some of the improvements he made last season, and you heard some good things about Thompson, you know, whether that was going to be moving to a bullpen role or something like that in 24 at the minors. You heard some good things about him, and it's possible that with the stuff he's got, he's able to learn his way around getting hitters out. Hope for the best for Matt Thompson. But for Bailey Horn, who comes back to the team that drafted him, it's possible that he's a little bit closer to getting bullpen work. The White Sox sent Bailey Horn to the Cubs for Ryan Tepera in the 2021 season. Remember, that was part of that big bullpen pickup for the White Sox as they made their push in 21. Ryan Tepera and then Craig Kimbrell in separate deals, albeit. But Horn, last year, pitched Double-A and Triple-A. Had a 4.21 ERA in 65 innings out of the bullpens. That's combined across Double-A and Triple-A. And as we tell you, don't scout the stat line. That's very much a stat line. What I like are rate stats, though, if you can. 28.7% strikeout rate. That's a good number. Did walk a lot, 12.5%. He was ranked 28th in the Cubs system by Baseball America heading into this year. 94 to 95, 96 with a fastball, good slider, good curveball. It's a whippy arm action. It's a lot of movement, and that's what kind of has moved Bailey Horn from a potential starter to a bullpen kind of guy, high effort kind of arm action. In fact, Baseball America's report says below average control, significant injury risk. So we'll see if a guy like Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz are going to revamp that delivery just a little bit. Maybe there's some arm shortening that Ethan Katz has been very successful with that might be able to keep Bailey Horn in a more repeatable delivery, but you would still expect something out of the bullpen. You figure that Horn could see some major league action this year. He's yet to do so, but he's got three minor league options remaining. He's on the 40-man roster. And, you know, listen, we were just talking about having a lot of pitching depth available to an organization. I would love to see a season, given where the White Sox are in building their roster, I'd love to see a season where you shuttle relievers in and out of AAA, a lot like the Rays do. You know, being able to take those, you know, maybe like three, quote-unquote, end-of-the-bullpen spots and handing them to younger players to see what they've got, to let them try and succeed, to even allow them to fail, so that they understand what that looks like, can head back to AAA, re-understand the assignment, make those adjustments, and head back up to Major League Baseball. I would love to see the bullpen handled in that way this season, and Bailey Horn could be one of the guys, you know, rotating in and out, if indeed that's the case. So those are the two biggest roster moves for the White Sox here over the last few days. When we come back, we'll talk to White Sox Director of Youth Baseball, Michael Huff, about the upcoming camps for the White Sox. Signups are opening next week, and about opening day for the White Sox themselves. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and joined by the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox, former big leaguer, new Trier graduate, Northwestern's own, Michael Hough. Michael, it is always a pleasure to talk. I get excited to have our conversation three or four times a year because that means that we are either getting ready to start a baseball season, getting ready for the All-Star break, getting ready to wrap a season, or talking about youth baseball, which is a subject you and I are incredibly passionate about. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I know you and the staff with the youth baseball department with the White Sox are getting very busy because 50 camps are getting ready to open very, very soon across the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, thank you, Connor. Great hearing your voice. Great being back on the show. And yes, this does feel very good, very comfortable, very exciting that the season is right around the corner, which means for me, like you said, overseeing youth baseball, we do camps and clinics for little leagues in the area. We have a jersey program for the leagues. But at this time of the year, with all of the relationships we have, everybody is reaching out saying, hey, can we do some preseason training? Can we have some of your coaches help our kids? Can we do a coaches clinic, which again, gets me smiling and the blood flowing, knowing that the major league season is right around the corner, but being able to do these things in the community and really reaching out grassroots is very fulfilling and very fun.
You know, it's funny, Michael, as we go winter by winter here over the last, I don't know, call it 10, 15 years, it seems to me that parents of baseball players are concerning themselves more and more earlier and earlier about what camps we're going to, what leagues we're playing in. It just feels like it's almost like politics, right? Like every year is an election year. Well, every winter you're worried about which next place you're going to play a little baseball. Are you feeling that with the everybody signing up, everybody planning?
And but we've talked about this, Connor. I think, you know, the advent of travel in all sports, there's a good side to it, but there's a bigger bad side to it. And you're exactly right. You have parents of 8-year-old kids worrying about which league their son or daughter are going to be playing in. They're worried about which travel team their son or daughter are going to be playing in. And as you well know, at that age, let's just let these kids have fun. So we as the White Sox love to go out and teach and coach both the boys and girls just to build those solid foundations, the building blocks to have success. And then you get to middle school, you can start to focus, but there's too much focus way too early on those things. And it just puts pressure, not just on the kids, but like you said, on the parents who are pulling out their hair saying, are we in the right league? You know, do we need a third set of uniforms? Yeah. Like what the cost is going up. There's so many negative things surrounding that push for that travel. But, you know, we try to help those in-house leagues and all those parents and kids have as good experience as possible and have as much success as possible.
Well, that's one of the things, too, that I think separates youth baseball with the White Sox from a lot of other places that kind of get these camps together or these instructional opportunities together. There's a focus on the fun from you guys. And whether you talk to parents or whether you talk to the kids that have been at this camp, the instructors that are there, like it's palpable, you know, that need to make sure that, yeah, we'll go through the instruction and the building blocks and everything, but you're going to have a lot of fun in these camps in these couple of days.
Exactly. Well, especially for those summer camps. Like you said, our website, thewhitesox.com/play, will go live next week, March 6th, where the registrations will open in all 50 locations. And last year, reaching almost 3,000 kids and truly only having two negative emails experiences. To your point, those 4 days of camp, we're going to hit them hard, the first couple, with the fundamentals on pitching, throwing, hitting, fielding, ground balls, fly balls, base running. But at the end of that second day and starting the third, where we will continue to do some drills, the games start to take over. And the games in each of the sections, be it a base running game, a throwing game, a hitting game, ending at the end of each day with true games going on between the kids, we know these kids are walking away with a big smile and then applying some of those basic fundamentals. And truly, and I'm going to say this, I know it's kind of crazy on White Sox Weekly, it doesn't matter if you're a Cub or a Sox fan. What the Cub coaches are teaching the Cub players is identical to what the Sox coaches are teaching the Sox players. So you can be a Northside fan and still come to a White Sox camp, but we're going to teach the absolutes of baseball taught on either side of town and making sure, like you said, the kids have some fun and can apply those fundamentals that they're learning.
We're talking with Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox here on White Sox Weekly. I think one thing you mentioned a little bit earlier in the show is something that I've been reading a lot from, you know, folks who rank minor league systems across Major League Baseball, minor league baseball, and from scouts as well that I've talked to over the last 2-3 years. There is a new emphasis, or maybe a redone emphasis on, and we're talking at the major league level here, right? Like college players going into the pros or high-level prep players getting drafted. There is a new emphasis, it feels to me, on players that have diversified their playing experience with other sports, not just baseball. Colson Montgomery, the top prospect for the White Sox, is a great example of this. He was a high-level basketball player in Indiana, of all places, where you have to be a stone-cold shooter to matter at all, right?
Or
whether it's a guy like, I don't know, Kyle Schwarber, who played high-level football in Midland in Ohio, which is a serious football program. People are looking more and more at kids that have played a lot of sports. I wonder if you can point to why that's become such a big emphasis here and how you kind of talk with parents and even the players themselves, youth players themselves, about what that means to their overall athlete experience.
Well, lucky for me, I get to speak it from the heart because I was a three-sport athlete at Nutria growing up. But for our traveled players at the high school level for the White Sox Elite, I know for Anthony Leva on the ACE program, we encourage, almost expect our kids to be playing a second or third sport. I am saying it every time that we're talking to these little leagues about what's going on. And what I say to the parents is, look, when I was playing football, I learned really quickly the difference between pain and an injury. You know, you come around on an option and some guy squashes you. You got to get up, get back in the huddle for the next play. So immediately I'm learning the difference between those things. As the point guard, smallest guy on the team, getting low, trying to be quick laterally, trying to play great defense, being athletic, building up a different set of muscles. But now all of a sudden, that left to right, kind of shuffling those feet, I became a really good base stealer, okay? Unless I checked, you got to kind of turn sideways and run, kind of like in basketball. And then baseball, just they had that coordination. So I'm able to speak to the parents when I'm at these coaches' clinics or when we're doing our summer camps and truly say to them, look, this is incredibly important that you let your 8, 10, 12, 14-year-old son or daughter build those muscle groups that will help them develop as an athlete and help them build up their coordination. And if you don't, you're almost setting them up for failure of an injury to happen at some point. And again, having lived it, I think it comes across a lot more passionate because I do feel that way. And like I said, with Jim Adusi running our travel teams at that high school level, with Anthony Oliva running his ACE kids, it is encouraged and almost expected that these kids are playing the second sport.
I want to talk about the camps, spring trainings that are underway either in Arizona or Florida. I think it's really interesting you talk to a guy that has had the experience that you had at the minor and major league levels in baseball. We're going to look at guys that we know they're going to make the 26-man roster, and then we'll have the conversation about how, well, yeah, even though this guy's the last guy for the 26-man roster, there's not going to be 26 all year long for the White Sox. Shoot, you're probably going to go through 35 pitchers, and that's if you're a healthy season, right? But I'm wondering for you, what was the mindset difference for you going into a camp where you thought, okay, I've got a gig, it's mine to lose, or going into a camp thinking, I have to beat out 13 other guys for this fourth outfield spot, and if I have to, I will put a rake out in right field while we're shagging fly balls, because if this guy has to get hurt, at least it's not me. Like, I know that's nothing you ever did, but I know how competitive you guys get.
Right. Thought about it. Never did. Exactly. I think for most every player, and I truly mean 9 out of 10, when you're coming up through the minor leagues, that first year of spring training is where you truly feel like you have a chance. You are coming to spring training almost in 100% ready-to-go mode because you know you're going to get very few at-bats early on. You're going to have to perform well in those first at-bats so that in the middle of spring training, you're getting more at-bats, and that you've earned your way into getting even more at-bats toward the end of spring training. I was pretty fortunate. Like, the first couple of times getting called up with the White Sox or with the Dodgers, it, I never really knew. It seemed like an unrealistic goal. But then after I went to Cleveland and I got traded to the White Sox, in those last 4 or 5 years, there were a couple where I had such success during the season prior that the conversations from the coaches at the end of the year and in the winter were more along the lines of, here's what we're expecting you, 125 games starting in right field or doing this. The other 4 years, it was, again, them understanding I'm a professional, I'm a grown-up, saying you don't necessarily have a job, but we know we would love to have you here. And here's what you need to do coming into spring training and through spring training to leave with us. And understand, if you fail for whatever reason, injury, you just play poorly, you're going to AAA, but we need you to make sure you pick your game back up. Because just as you said, Connor, there's injuries that happen. There are trades that happen. And every organization needs 30, 40, 50 players some years, unfortunately, to perform at the major league level. So it is a different mindset, and truly the players now come into spring training in such good shape. They diet, they eat so well, they take such good care of their bodies that, you know, especially right now with the White Sox, was such an opportunity for so many guys to make an impression and break with the team, that there's a lot of competition. And nothing is being lied to these guys, that you're on the team or you're not on the team, but I guarantee with the White Sox coaches and the way this organization's run, there have been some real conversations with these players of, here's what you have to do, not need to do, have to do to break with us. And if not, keep your chin up, go back to AAA Charlotte and perform, because you know there's going to be an injury.
White Sox fans have been glued to the position battle in right field. I think all spring, and probably will be for the next couple of weeks, whether it's Zach Deloche, who's not had big league time, Dominic Fletcher, who had a cup of coffee and played really well for the Diamondbacks last year, Kevin Pillar, a veteran, Brett Phillips, a veteran, Oscar Colas and Gavin Sheets, who have been with this team, you know, kind of incumbents. There's a lot of dudes. I'm wondering.
That's a lot of dudes.
It really is. And yet, it can be so hard for people who haven't played the game at that level to evaluate spring training, right? Because I know that even if, let's just pick Dominic Fletcher, if he has an O for the next week and a half in the Cactus League, that does not necessarily mean that he's losing a grip on the job that Chris Getz said he had a leg up for. What's an example of some of the things that a coach might tell a player in that position, in a position battle, that they want to see done on the field, on the backfields, practiced with? Like, how does this really get evaluated? Because you could just hit rockets at people and go 0 for 12 and say, well, shit, I'm going to AAA.
Right. You know, I you said it very well, and I don't think the fans listening right now heard it. It's not just during the games, it's the backfields. For a guy like Gavin Sheets, for Dominic Fletcher, for these types of, you know, Kevin Pillar guys that have had major league experience and success at the major league level, the coaches will be saying, this is more about process. This is more about how you are preparing yourself. If you are 0 for 12 and it's six strikeouts that look really bad and three ground balls, two pop-ups, and one line drive, that's different than, as you said, three strikeouts that were clearly bad calls, because the umpires are spring training too, and the coaches can see a catcher reaching up almost eye level and you getting called out. Four one hoppers to short, three balls in the gap that some kid makes a diving play, and then one base hit. Like, there's a 1 for 12 and there's a 1 for 12. And the coaches are also seeing what the work ethic is like on the backfields. Is that player helping other teammates, or is he just focused on himself? Is that player getting there 5-10 minutes early? Is he staying, like you said, 5-10 minutes late? You know, those are the things that people may not understand at spring training, that there are so many coaches watching those battles to see how people are reacting, seeing how people are interacting with other people, seeing if player is selfish or player is still team oriented and team focused. And when it comes to that last week, those will be the differentiators on who comes out and comes back to Chicago and who goes to Charlotte.
How cognizant were you as a player during spring training, whether it was a year you knew you were going to make the team or not, about the clubhouse mix? I mean, would you look around at times and go, this guy didn't quite fit, or man, I hope this guy's on the team with me because it all kind of works together? I mean, chemistry is a very real thing and nothing we've really figured out how to engineer yet.
No, it's very well said, Connor. It is real. It is palpable. And again, I think if you just go to the White Sox clubhouse over the last 5-6 years, there's been a couple of years where you walk in and you feel like there's this positive energy, and there's been a couple of years we walk in and it's like, oh, doesn't feel quite the same. But that's where, and it's not Pedro, it's a lot of the other coaches that are walking through the clubhouse pre and post, that are watching the stretching, are watching the sprints at the end of a day, are watching how the work is getting done on the backfield. Those are the guys that are picking up those little nuances. And to your point, incredibly important, especially on a year like this, that I truly believe it's going to be fun baseball, exciting baseball to watch, where last year it may not have been at times. And it also is going to be the type of thing that you're going to see players really getting after it more and more this year, which I think as fans come out to the games, it's going to be much more enjoyable and a great experience.
We're less than a month away from opening day. You are one of, I don't know, something like 25,000 people on the face of this planet ever who have been in uniform for opening day. The flyover, the anthem, the full crowd, the whole deal. I mean, can you even describe it to somebody who's not been in that position before? It has to be everything, right?
Yeah, when you're on the field, you're getting your name called. That is, it's chilling. It's one of those dream come trues. You almost have to pinch yourself. I'm going to flip this around, though. I have more memories of an opening day with my father than me as a player, because my dad traveled all over the world for business. And it when he was in Chicago, when we were at home, when he was home, and he made a point to not schedule a trip to see opening day, those are the memories I still kind of hearken back to. The opening day in California, being the starting right fielder in 92, yes, great memory, 3-for-4, like the back of my hand.
Yeah.
But 75, 77, like 80, going to games with my dad and having him spend the time with me. And again, watching the game, taking the old scorecard and trying to fill it out. Those are some of my best memories of the opening days that we would talk about life. But you would truly say, look, every team is 0-0. Like every team has a chance if they play well, because we all know, and being around the game like you have, any pitcher can beat any team, and any team can beat any pitcher on a given day. The hard part is with the 162 games. How often can you really beat that best pitcher? But you can beat the best pitcher, and it can be the worst teams that beat the best teams when the best teams kind of look past them. So every player is a major leaguer for a reason. And the hope this year, and I feel confident in saying that this year, is that there will be a lot more wins than last year, but it's going to be a different type of game that I think every parent is going to want their child to see.
That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Big thanks to Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox. Again, camps open next week. Get your kid up. It's a great, great time. We'll be back for more White Sox Weekly next Saturday right here on ESPN 1000.